This is really, it's just been a sad week in my work. And in my awareness of our ongoing national struggle to be good people, Shirley Shelton died midweek, and though it was a good death following a good life, I just find her death so sad. And I forgot, I was sitting with Evelyn the other day, Evelyn Lentz, you know, Herschel's dying in the other room, and she's sitting there and she's picking on me that I'm such a bad cook. And she, all of a sudden she elbowed me and she said, "You need to get JP, JP's over here, ready for the funerals." And in the midst of all that, I try my best to stay out of the mainstream of the news cycle, but it's not easy. I was particularly caught by the forced removal of a gentleman who was an illegal immigrant who was brought to our country as a 10-year-old, no choice of his. And after 30 years, he is deported away from his wife and children, job as a taxpayer, because in those 30 years, we could not give him legal status. I hate politics that do harm. And in addition, if we are paying attention, it has been an awful week of listening to the 100 plus women who were sexually and physically abused as part of our nation's elite gymnastics teams. We have to listen, because until we believe the fullness of the harm done to our children, we will never fully bring such abuses to an end. Please be brave. Read the statements and be advocates against our children being so easily abused right in front of us by many of our most trusted people. Last Monday evening, on the evening set aside for remembering Dr. King and his call to public service, I was working at the Interfaith Winter Shelter, which is now, as you know, housed at a single facility over on West 3rd Street. We were, as usual, overloaded with volunteers for the first shift because it was MLK Day. We were that evening, again, a safe, secure shelter, along with a good meal, away from absolutely stupid cold temperatures. We had 56 men and 10 women. Now, many of you who are regular volunteers got the night off because of the King holiday and all the influx of new volunteers, but I want to thank you, each of you, who are either volunteers or financial supporters of our shared ministry efforts there. Incidentally, it's not inexpensive to care for the least of those in our society who are suffering from lack of shelter in these cold winter months. Many of us volunteer our time, but things like food and supplies for 5 months of shelter is probably costing us around $15,000 to $17,000 that we pay for out of donations that many of you make to the program. First United is financing the majority of the cost of the supplies this year, as we are in a transition from multiple sites to one site, and the board was, of course, poorly organized to think about that in advance. But your gracious giving makes it possible for us to help the Greater Shelter Organization in this way. Our supply purchaser and organizer, incidentally, is Marie Schmidt, and she does a phenomenal job for us, so thank you. We have so many of you who do what you do for the shelter and any number of other agencies and programs, and none of it goes unnoticed, especially by those of our community who simply really need the services that we are part of providing. Food and shelter insecurity in our town and county remains at a seriously high level. What you may not be consciously aware of is how First United, along with about 24 other groups in town, have made such a significant impact through the sheltering effort alone. We started 9 years ago inviting men and women to sleep and get a meal down in our fellowship hall, along with four other sites. The winter previous to our opening, there were 24 cold-related deaths in Monroe County in the homeless population. Homeless people still die, but the weather-related problems have been totally eliminated. It remains difficult on people's health to be homeless. Men and women who look much older than I do are in reality in their late 30s and 40s. There are issues with alcohol, other drugs, abuse, mental health concerns that are strenuous beyond our measure in the homeless population that ages people very quickly. Our efforts in the past decade have helped significantly identify the homeless population. Two facilities in the last 9 years have been built, Crawford House 1, Crawford House 2, and they have taken, along with other private apartments, over 100 people off the streets and out of our shelters. The Shalom Center in Wheeler, Mission remains over full, because every time we open Crawford House, that takes another 50 to 70 people off the street. Suddenly, they come in from other places that we just didn't know where they were. So our shelters would be staggeringly fuller were it not for the ongoing effort to provide shelter in managed communities like the Crawford Apartments. It is not an overstatement, friends, that you, in your efforts to be faithful stewards of your church building and staff time, have played an overwhelming part in the greater Bloomington response to efforts in poverty and hunger in so many different organizations. Now, one further update. You know that I was practically going mad in my passion that we were going to put LGBTQ PAI folks at risk by putting them in the shelter at Wheeler Mission. Wheeler Mission remains painfully out of touch with any semblance of respect for the array and continuum of God-gifted sexuality and gender identity. I went embarrassingly public and loud as I knew to go about this problem. Last Thursday evening, a trans woman presented for shelter. She was warmly welcomed by IWS personnel and was allowed to sleep as she presented. The Wheeler policy would not have allowed her to sleep as a woman, but I would argue that we made such a wonderful fuss about it that IWS guidelines were followed explicitly. We had male guests who complained and were somewhat threatening, and they were given the option to either cool down and go to sleep or leave the shelter. I was very proud of IWS for standing firmly in respect of all people, especially those most at risk. And few folks are more at risk in our society than the trans folks. Many of you work quietly and relatively tirelessly, and you do the work. You do it without thought of reward or formal recognition. And I want to thank you for your natural humility that is born out of what? Some combination of your upbringing, your faith, and how you evolved in your life. Dr. King sought to wear his popularity and weld his power, I think, in similar ways. Dr. King and in like manner Jesus did not think themselves special. They knew they weren't. They were just called to be doing what they were doing. Both of them, even Jesus, I'm sure, would be embarrassed to see themselves elevated in unnatural ways, because both of them knew that it was God at work in their lives that fed them to go on and to live on and to demonstrate what needed to be done, even in the face of near certain death. In their day, each of those people were probably more unpopular than popular. And it has been tragic that it was only in the aftermath of their murders that those who had eyes that would see recognized the presence of God that was so fully evident in the way they lived. I was taken aback this week to read about the placement of the King Memorial in Washington, D.C. The statue of Dr. King is very imposingly stern, looking with his arms, crossed over his chest, no smile. And one commentator this past week startled me by saying maybe his look, maybe his demeanor is in reaction to what his statue will have to look at every day, which is a Thomas Jefferson memorial. A man, Jefferson, who is great by so many standards and who wrote those infamous words that all men are created equal, yet he owned in his lifetime 600 slaves and freed only 7 of them. I think he deserves to be stared down by Dr. King for as long as those monuments survive. Now, I know as I listen to the news that I should not be surprised in these days of radical rhetoric, but I am. A Calvin College professor of social work wrote an article for Sojourners Magazine that fits so well into my MLK reading and meditations this week. Calvin College is a Christian liberal arts school in which liberal is not to be thought of politically or socially. Calvin College is in southwestern Michigan and is a generally conservative school, as much as one might expect for a college named after Calvin. The college has been suffering from ongoing bouts of racist vandalizing, and the students there and many professors thought that the administrative response has been woefully inadequate. And this professor wrote the following in the school newspaper, which I will quote. He wrote, "As a white male, I benefit tremendously from institutions and systems that have been built by and for people like me. This is how the social sciences define racism, not as merely the product of prejudice, explicit or implicit bias, but a system of power based on the invention of the white race by people in power," end quote. God bless him. He is now considered on national alt-right websites a radical professor. The day after his comments were published in the school newspaper, the article was picked up by Tucker Carlson's website, The Daily Caller, under the headline, and I quote again, "Professor blames white privilege for the existence of Michigan," end quote. From there, the news ricocheted around the far right and alt-right web. It was picked up by InfoWars, TeaParty.org, Patriot News Daily, Campus Reform, and dissected and discussed on white supremacist sites like Stormfront.org. Too many of us, especially white Americans, would rather not listen to the call to repentance from our brothers and sisters at Standing Rock. We still would rather not confront America's original sins of genocide and slavery. We would rather not think about the black bodies broken at the hands of the state in the name of justice, the failure of that same system to return verdicts, and the mass incarceration of people of color and the poor. Isaiah 30, verses 9 and 10, says, "We are a rebellious people, faithless children, children who will not hear the instruction of the Lord, who say to the seers, 'Do not see,' and to the prophets, 'Do not prophesy to us what is right. Speak to us smooth things, easy to digest things. Prophesy to us illusions,'" end quote. Don't you wonder what will make America great again? Do not remind us that for many, a return to some imagined point in the past is a return to oppression and violence. Pay no attention to the thick cloud at the top of the mountain, the thunder and the lightning, Exodus 19. Now, look at this golden calf. Look at the gold-plated skyscraper. Ask with scorn, as Pilate did, "What is truth?" Do not concern yourself with an answer. Give the people what they want. You know, if it's leftist propaganda to talk about the poor, the widow, the orphan, the immigrant, in short, to talk about the way of Jesus the Christ, then let's do it all the louder. If it is leftist propaganda to talk about the poor, the widow, and the orphan, and the immigrant, to talk about justice and love for God and neighbor, to talk about humility and grace, in short, to talk about the gospel of Jesus the Christ, and let us do it all the louder. Otherwise, we trade the truth for power. We trade our witness for the respect of the empire. As Rauschenbusch said of the Christians of his day, who rejected his social gospel, and I quote, "Their religion has made them respected. All men liked them for their goodness, but their goodness was never so good that it waked up the devil." If, in speaking prophetically, we wake the devil, let us not be afraid, for the devil is a liar and we serve a truth that is greater than that. There are no guarantees. That's why I guess we have the cross. There are no guarantees of security or success for anyone or for us, but there is a joy of living in the wondrous and holy adventure of meaningful companionship with God and with each other. We need to so live.